welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, and we have, as always, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Bruce Helmer, and financial advisor, and Peg Webb, senior vice president and financial advisor, and we are talking about the pursuit of happiness this week. Bruce, I think that's something everybody would like to have, is happiness, but we can't always get it all the time. Good morning to both of you, Bruce and Peg.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Peg. Hi, Susie Jones. Hello, listeners. Thank you for being with us. So, as Susie mentioned, we're going to talk, Peg, a little bit about pursuit of happiness, financial independence. If you're listening right now, it's probably still close to Independence Day, the 4th of July. We touched on this a little bit last week, this idea of creating financial independence, what the American dream is, how we help people achieve the American dream, and so forth. And we'll dig into that a little deeper this week. But, Peg, we would be remiss if we didn't mention a couple of things that are timely with regard to being in the news. The first one, as most people are probably aware now, President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill is no longer a bill. It's the law of the land. It got through Congress on Friday. The president has signed it into law. And it's almost 900 pages long, so it's probably going to take weeks to unravel everything that's really in there. But some of the headlines or some of the highlights, and the big one that probably most listeners are wondering about, and we've been talking about it actually on this program for years, was the idea that the tax cuts that were created in 2016 were set to expire at the end of this year, and taxes were going to resort back to previous levels, which for most people would have been an increase in their taxes. And a lot of the planning that we've done at Wealth Enhancement for our clients has been on this idea that taxes might be on sale right now, they might not never be lower, and they may, in fact, go up again. In fact, under the law, unless Congress takes action, they will go up again. Well, Congress took action. They passed the bill. President signed it. So the tax cuts will continue. They say permanently, but, of course, you can always change tax law if you get enough people interested in doing that. So most people are going to continue to see the same tax rates going forward. That's the big one that probably impacts almost all of our listeners. Some of the other highlights, some changes to Medicaid. They're increasing spending for border security, and then they're cutting some social programs. And, of course, there's always controversy on the two sides of the aisle don't agree on, you know, all the things in the bill. And we're not going to editorialize whether it's good or bad. Time will tell. I mean, obviously, if there was an obvious answer, there would be universal agreement and there wouldn't have to be such debate. Nobody knows exactly if this is going to turn out to be good or bad. But what we know factually, and the big one, is that the tax cuts that we saw now almost 10 years ago are going to continue. Peg, what did I miss? What did you read or what did you glean, what you've heard so far in the news? What do you think are key things that people need to understand? And again, we'll add clarity to this as time goes on and we get more clarity. Peg?
Yeah, I thought this one was interesting, and talking about taxes again is probably the broadest tax impact that came from this is that they are looking at taxpayers that are 65 and older, and then giving them an additional, it's called a bonus deduction of $6,000 that could kind of, it's supposed to be offsetting maybe what they wanted to do on Social Security, but then they are targeting 65 and older. And if you're single, $75,000, or you're a couple, or joint return, $150,000, you'll get this extra deduction. So I was kind of surprised about that. I didn't hear a lot about that before I read it late last week. And then the other good news, I think, is that the standard deduction actually stayed the same. So, you know, Bruce, how many people who do their taxes or through accountants or tax preparers have gone to the standard deduction because of all the elimination of what we could deduct on our itemized form. And so I want to say it's 60 or 70% of the people that actually don't itemize anymore, and they're taking the standard deduction. So that standard deduction is permanent, and you said it already, permanent for now, but it's going to remain the same, and then it'll have a slight inflation rise. But other than that, and then, you know, I just have to mention the estate taxes. Remember, we talk a lot about that. We've been doing planning a lot with our very high net worth clients. If they were to revert back to what it was $7 million a piece, everything over that, or with a couple, $14 million over that, would be taxed. And some taxes, like 30% of the net worth that you have left. Well, in this new big, beautiful bill, they just stated that it's $15 million per family, per person per family. So it'd be a total of $30 million if you die with that kind of wealth. And I apologize for bringing that up, because the percentage of people that are in that particular realm is, a lot smaller than the average people, you know, around America. So those were just a couple things, Bruce.
Yeah. And then again, back to the tax thing really quick, there's going to be some benefit for those people listening that get tips, or those people that get overtime. There's some benefits from a tax standpoint for those types of workers. So again, it's going to take a while to get the arms around this thing completely, but we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, it's been talked about a lot for years. We've been talking about the tax consequences of not doing something. Well, something has been done. We now know going forward that our tax cuts that we got a decade ago are being extended. And the other thing I wanted to mention just really quickly, Peg, because again, we tend to talk about the markets a lot when they're bad, right? So yeah. Around Easter or whatever it was, the markets were down roughly, 15%, and everybody wanted to talk about the markets, and now they're at or near all-time highs. You've had a nice little uptick, and now nobody wants to talk about that. Well, I thought I should bring that up, that as frightened as people were just a few short weeks ago or a couple months ago, everything's looking, pretty good right now. But again, who knows what tomorrow will bring? We don't know. Nobody knows. But right now, things look pretty good. Peg?
Well, yeah, I'm just looking because I kind of track it just so I have it week to week to week. And it was just back in April, the first week in April, the S&P 500 was down 13.7% and the NASDAQ was down 19.3%. So I can't help but say that I'm beaming that we are in the positive territory, where we're 6.8% S&P up, and then the NASDAQ is 6.7. So we have more to come, I'm sure, but it's a good feeling that we have gone back to where we were, at least in the beginning of the year. So,
and in April, when we told everybody, don't panic, stay the course, a lot of people said, shut up, tell me something I can do right now. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, you're bored with our answer, but it's the right answer. Time will tell. And knock on wood, right now that advice looks pretty good and markets look good again. So I thought we should at least mention that. So Peg, Independence Day, most people just celebrated the holiday, our national independence, July 4th. Independence Day, the pursuit of happiness. Our forefathers, wrote about this in the Declaration of Independence. Let's talk a little bit about what we mean and how financial planning can help people in this pursuit of happiness and this goal of financial independence, financial freedom.
Yeah, I think, everybody views it a little bit differently. Because of the career that we have, Bruce, as financial advisors, when we're chatting with people, they all have their life aspirations, and I see that as their vision of financial independence. One might be being able to retire early, or not being a financial burden, helping out their children, working only if they want to. I tell this story often on the show, that I always had this dream of when I was 55, that I wanted the ability to do whatever I wanted to do. And I often talk about, you know, driving 40 minutes to get to the office. And I would see this woman on the edge of her driveway, and she had this vegetable stand. And it just looked so peaceful, and the sun would be just coming up when I was going in. I said, you know what? I'd love to be able to have the choice of doing that at 55. It just looks so relaxing to me. So to me, that's a vision of financial independence. And so no matter how you think about it, maybe you're goal-oriented or, you know, you're good, you're savvy with money, you're good with creating a long-term financial plan, there's still some difference in what people define that financial independence as. Bruce?
Well, yeah, and then we talk about that a lot too, that we're all snowflakes. You know, we all have different, you know, core values, different goals. Some people, your dream might be to spend most of your retirement fishing on a lake in northern Minnesota. Other people, it might be spending more time with kids and grandkids. Others might want to travel. Others might want to pursue adventures, take a safari in Africa, whatever it is. And I think, Peg, financial independence to me means having the economic wherewithal to make those choices of what's important to you, what your goals and objectives are based on your core values, your life priorities, to be able to do what you want to do and not have restrictions, not have to say, I would really like to spend more time with my kids and my grandkids, but they're scattered all over the country and I can't afford to travel there. Financial independence means you're able to do that and enjoy life the way you want and not have to worry about running out of money. At least that's my definition. So assuming you have a similar definition, let's give some listeners and let's give folks something tangible. It's easy to say that. How do you do it?
Yeah. Well, and with these values, it also goes, it correlates then with how you spend your money and at any age, you know. So if you have these values and it's important to you, but it's just probably good to consider the why. Like every time you spend money, why am I doing this? Just to ask yourself, you know, is it for yourself? Is it for the family? Is it for the long term? On the outline that was given to us, I thought this was a really good example. It says, if you earn $50 an hour and you buy a $50,000 boat, that's 1,000 hours of work, half a year. I thought that was amazing. I personally really haven't done that math when I want to go buy a very expensive thing. But now imagine you also value spending time with your kids. And they don't even like fishing. So that boat may not be delivering what matters most. So financial independence, once again, just means making those spending decisions that match your life priorities, not just reacting to an impulse or a lifestyle big purchase that you made. So I thought that on the outline, Bruce, really kind of hit me and said, wow, kind of turn it inside out and ask, why are you doing this spending versus just doing it, Bruce?
Good clarification and good point. And so again, everybody's going to be a little bit different, but to get to where you want to be, I think the first step, Peg, we always coach people that they should have a rainy day or an emergency fund. And I bring this up, and I just had somebody last week that was lamenting their own situation. They were talking about having money in cash, and they were kind of kicking themselves because they said, you know, the stock market's been going great guns, and I have this money in cash, you know, making, I think they said it was 3%, whatever they were earning, and they were sort of beating themselves up. And I said, well, wait a minute, though. Everybody needs some of that kind of money. Not 100% of your money should be exposed to stocks and, yes, potentially higher returns, but also volatility. Stocks can go backwards also. And we all need some safe rainy day money that's liquid, that's accessible, that the principal's not at risk, and it's there if we have an emergency, if something goes wrong. And we coach people, and this can change a little bit based on their age, but I would say at a minimum, people should have 6 months of living expenses set aside in, in an emergency fund or a rainy day fund, and probably even longer as you get older and closer to retirement. Peg, building an emergency fund, what would you tell folks?
Well, number one is, do you remember for over a decade, we got zero on our cash sitting around as our emergency fund? And for quite some time now, and I looked this morning as well, it's 4% on money market still. So I personally have been much more relaxed about my rainy day fund in safe, you know, safer vehicles, because I'm getting some money on my money. Now, quite frankly, if you tie that to what inflation rates are, maybe net net, you're not making as much. But yet, let's just in a simple scale, I think it's really important to have an emergency fund. And I'm excited that I'm getting this 4%. And you don't just all of a sudden look at the rates of return so far on the stock market and woulda, shoulda, coulda, wish I did put more in the stock market. You have to start simple. What percentage do you want in growth? What percentage do you want in fixed income? And what percentage do you want in cash? The elements and the things that are happening around us now cannot steer you from those percentages unless you'd give me a really good reason and story to do that. So we deal with that, Bruce, all the time, is to pull people back to reality versus chasing returns, Bruce.
Yeah, and I told this individual that, frankly, I didn't think they had too much cash, and they shouldn't be beating themselves up. That's something we would coach you to do. I think, Peg, a lot of cynics look at you and I and people in our industry and say, oh, they want you to give them all of your money. But I frequently coach clients not to give me more money, to find, you know, the best interest rate they can on a safe emergency fund type place, and that's not necessarily with me or with Wealth Enhancement. You know, Peg, again, when we talk about getting this financial independence, we talk about core values and goals and priorities, you can boil it down kind of to a simple formula that, you know, you need to save more, invest more, and spend less. Let's talk about some of those things, though, because, again, it's easy to say save more, spend less, but as a practical matter, how do you do that?
Yeah, and that's a good lead-in, Bruce, to actions that you can do today. Increasing your net savings rate, like what percentage are you saving? We talk often on the show, hide money from yourself. And so I so encourage people, and even people that just talk to me outside of work, you know, how do I increase my savings? Well, you have to hide it from yourself, meaning the money that comes out of your paycheck, and that you direct to maybe a 401k or a 403b or a Roth, or these automatic payments are such a savior for people, because one, if you had that money in your checking account, you may want to spend it versus saving it. So if you're saving, you know, a good percentage and hiding it from yourself, I think people just feel so great that they did that. Secondly, on an action that you can take is tracking your spending. And that can be hard in today's automated computer ways of doing things. I found it easier when I had to really write down what I was spending in a checkbook. Now that's dating me, but yet there's still ways that you could use electronics today on the computer, because there's so much software out there that says, you know, create a budget, and then it turns red when you're over it. And there's signs out there that say, okay, that's way too much. You're spending way too much. And, you know, we need these kind of constant monitors, and maybe the screen turns red if you're, you know, if you're over the number that you're supposed to be, Bruce.
Yeah. And with regard to spending, you know, there's, sometimes people have a hard time distinguishing the difference between something they need and something they want. And I'm not here to tell anybody how to live their life. You know, if you like stopping for, you know, coffee in the morning and paying for that coffee, I'm not going to tell you not to do it. If you like to go out and eat, or, you know, people should live the life they want. But most people, Peg, I have found, have waste somewhere in their spending. They're paying more in taxes than they would need to. If they did some planning, they could cut their taxes, or maybe they're paying too much for insurances. Maybe we can cut their insurance costs. So financial planning, if somebody tells me, I know I need to save and invest more, but I'm spending every dollar, but we really dig into it, and I'm not talking about your lifestyle choices, but things that you have to do, if there's a way to do those things more cost effectively, and often there is, that's a way that we can add value, because I can say to somebody, if I cut your taxes by $1,000 a year, or I cut your insurance costs by $1,000 a year, now you have that money back that you can save or invest, and it doesn't necessarily go to your lifestyle that you've been maybe spending too much on anyway. So, Peg, I know there's a couple other things we want to get to here, but we can probably wrap this up in the second half fairly quickly. And then, Susie, most of the second half of the show, we can take listeners' questions.
All right, that sounds good. So if you're listening, and a lot of people are texting already, Bruce and Peg, about some of the tax changes and what you're just talking about in terms of the pursuit of happiness and financial freedom, please call 651-461-9226. I'll say it one more time, 651-461-9226. Now, you can use that line to either call us and ask the question directly on the air, or you can use that as a text line, 651-461-9226. Again, we have a number of questions coming in, but we'll get to as many as we can about financial independence and some of the new tax laws back after this. It is Your Money. Welcome back to the second half of the program. I'm Susie Jones, Bruce Helmer, Peg Webb with us as always, and we're talking about the pursuit of happiness and the pursuit of financial independence and the journey that it is. And we've invited you to be a part of the second half of the program. You drive the show. 651-461-9226. Bruce, Peg, Bruce, do you want to recap or jump right in?
Thank you, Susie Jones. I'll do a quick recap, and then I know there's at least one more thing that Peg wants to hit on quickly. So in the first half of the show, if you joined us late, as Susie mentioned, we talked about the pursuit of happiness, financial independence. That can mean different things to different people based upon your core values, what's important to you. And then how do we achieve this? What are some practical things that you can do to help you on your journey? We talked about aligning your spending with your values and how it's different for everybody. We talked about building an emergency fund, that everybody should make that a high priority. We talk always about, spend less and save more and invest with purpose. That's easy to say, but it's harder to do. So we talked about, participating in a company retirement plan and hiding money from yourself. And we talked about how sometimes you're spending more than you have to and you don't even know it because you haven't had a good review of, your insurance costs, or you're paying more than you need to in taxes if you did some tax planning. Again, we're not talking about, your lifestyle choices because, we always also talk about the fact that you're saving for your future, but it's okay to have fun along the way, and we don't want to curtail all of your fun, but how can we be wiser in our choices and make them consistent with our core values? And then we talked about the fact again, getting to this financial independence is a journey where you have to balance the enjoyment of life day to day while you're living and compare that to some point in the future. Peg, you want to wrap this up and then we'll let listeners drive the show?
Yeah, really quickly, because I know we're getting a lot of texts and calls here. So the last point on actions that you could do today are calculating what they're calling a financial independence number. I've actually really never used that term in my practice, but a common guide, because we're financial planners, right? We're comprehensive planners. And to look at what is the amount that you're going to need, long term, meaning you're working so hard right now, you're trying to save as much as you can, but ultimately the day will come that you want to take money off of your money for your paychecks versus working. So we use a couple different things. I personally don't use this common guideline, which says 25 to 33 times your annual expenses. I don't use that because I don't feel like people do, maybe if it's your basic expenses, but all my clients, have big purchases that they have to make throughout their years, and it's hard to average that into a 25 to 33 times your annual expenses. The one that we focus more on is the percentage of a distribution withdrawal when you retire. So we do a lot of forecasting. How much can you afford to take off of your nest egg? Well, most people have Social Security. Some people have a pension. And then you have to rely on your savings to create the rest of the paycheck. So if you have a good pension and you have Social Security, and let's say you only need 3% off of your savings, that would be in the okay zone as far as we're concerned. Some people can go higher than that because they have a bigger nest egg built. And it's so individual, Bruce. So, and there's so many torpedoes that can hit a plan. So ours is just an ongoing financial plan. It's just not one that you could say, okay, let's look at 25, 33 times of that. It's not like that. It has to be monitored all the time for a high probability of success. Bruce?
Yeah, well, let's close with that. I like that. And you always say, Peg, you know, we don't write your financial plan and you plate it in gold like baby shoes and put it on your mantle and look at it. It's an ongoing process. Not only, you know, a lot of people, Peg, I think also think of planning until they retire and then they're done. That's really, in a lot of cases, when the real planning starts, is when you're retired, and retirement income planning, and how do we monitor your spending and make sure that you're spending the smartest money first and that your money doesn't run out before you run out of breath. A lot of the planning opportunities are actually most prevalent when you actually retire. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's a good close to this. Susie, listeners can take us the rest of the way with their questions.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. Texter writes, what is the best safe short-term investment of $10,000 for like 2 or maybe 3 years?
Hey, Peg, that's a great question. And I want to just add a wrinkle to that, Susie Jones and Peg Webb. You know, a lot of times we get a question like this, where someone will say, you know, can you find me something safe, and I need to make a certain interest rate. I need to make 8%, but I need it to be safe. Well, there is no such thing. If you want complete safety, and by safety, I'm assuming they mean no risk on their principal, you can't make 8%. There is no such animal. So, Peg, the question, and we actually led with this when we talked about steps to achieve financial independence, a rainy day fund, an emergency fund, where's a good place to put that money to get the best interest rate you can, to have it liquid and accessible when you need it, but also to have, like I said, safety and no risk of principal? What are you telling people? I know you mentioned in the first half of the show, and I agree, there's still 4% money market out there.
Right, there is. And the differences between a money market or a bank savings account versus, let's say, the treasury notes or treasury bonds, the actual certificate from the government. So if you want money that is just easily accessible, no matter if it's 2 days or 20 days or 2 years, and you feel comfortable just having it that liquid, then yes, I suggest money markets, which are still close or at 4%. Now, the negative of that, having that rate of return, is that changes every single day. So there's a lot of chatter right now about lowering interest rates. We don't know if it'll happen or not, but if we start lowering interest rates, the government, then these money markets are going to go down very, very quickly. So it's not something that you've locked in. If you feel like you are not going to need this money for 2 years or 3 years, you can buy individual treasury notes or bills or bonds. And right now, for a 2 year treasury, you can lock in that 3.9 or 4% on a treasury. But if you want to sell it before the maturity date, you may get less than you paid for. So it's all about the timing, Bruce, and what your purpose is for that rainy day fund.
Peg, what do you think about bank certificates of deposit, a 6-month, 9-month, 12-month, 18-month CD? Are you recommending that, or do you have clients using CDs?
I'm not, because they're lower interest than the treasuries at this point. And now the other thing we should mention is that treasuries are state income tax free. So you get a little bit of boost on buying a treasury versus a CD in the bank.
Good answer. Susie?
651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, the texter writes, Bruce, I thought I read where the standard deduction for seniors will be increased by $6,000 per year. Do I have that right? Question mark.
So thank you. And then Peggy, even though they said my name, you might want to jump in. I think what they might be talking about. Now, again, I want to be very, very clear. This is all very new. This was just signed into law over the weekend. At some point in the future, maybe we'll even devote an entire show to all these new changes that were part of this, again, almost 900-page bill. So I'm not going to sit here today and say I know all the particulars. I don't. But I think what the texter might be talking about when they mention the $6,000 is, you know, a lot of people are unhappy about having to pay taxes on their Social Security benefit. And taxes on Social Security did not go away, but for some people that are in a certain income range and over the age of 65, they're going to get credits on their taxes. And I think that had, Peg, that had something to do with the $6,000 number. But that was not, to my recollection, anything to do with the standard deduction. Do you have any clarity on that, Peg?
No, I don't think it had anything to do. It's just that you mentioned it. There's caps on income. So if an individual is $75,000 and a joint return $150,000, then you would be considered as having this extra tax deduction. And they do talk about this, and we did, Bruce and I did enjoy our 4th of July weekend, so we have not, you know, we read as much as we can, but we're still trying to get all the details. But this is kind of interesting because when it was COVID and we were getting those, our clients were getting those checks, they always seem to choose the $75,000 for a single tax filer and $150,000. So if you're below that, you may be eligible then for this extra. And yes, it's all about, in the things that I've read, is trying to offset Social Security tax. They're not going to touch Social Security taxes right now, but they are. This was kind of a workaround for that.
Yep. Susie?
651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, the texter writes, can you please talk about inherited IRAs and what the recipient needs to do? Is there a 10-year deadline, they wonder?
Yep. So, Susie, thank you for that. So, Peg, this is, something that we get questions on a lot. There still seems to be a lot of confusion about this. So, let's say you're a child and you inherit an individual retirement account from your parents, your mom or your dad. What do you have to do now that you inherit this money? How is it taxed? How does this work? What are the logistics of inheriting this money, Peg?
that's a lot, Bruce, because they've modified it quite a few times. And some people didn't like the original restrictions of, so it used to be, let's go all the way back. It used to be if somebody inherited an IRA, they could just continue this tax deferral until they came up with the age that they had to start taking the money out, required minimum distribution. Well, that didn't allow tax collection, you know, as quickly as the government wanted. So they came out with a new rule that said, number one, if it's your spouse inheriting, there's no new rules. The spouse can keep that going. Yes, you will have required minimum distributions, but the reason they wanted to start a new rule is that younger people were inheriting these IRAs, and they weren't going to get to this 73 years old required minimum distributions for a long time, and the IRS wants to collect more money. So what they did is they said, if you inherit an IRA, you have 10 years to liquidate that account. You're not going to get the forever as long as you live. And you can choose to take it. And I'm a little fuzzy about this, but you can choose to take it over time, or you can choose to take it on the very last day of the 10th year. Is that how you know it, Bruce?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, you know, that's where you mentioned it already, Peg. The exception is spouse. So listeners, you might be familiar with some of this terminology. We'll try to give you clarity. So you may have heard the expression stretch IRA. Well, that was the old law where you could stretch these payments out over your statistical life expectancy as the person that inherited this money. But that's basically gone away. If you inherit an IRA today, you've got 10 years to spend that down to zero. Like Peg said, you can take a lump sum in the first year, you can take a lump sum in the 10th year, or you can take about one-tenth of it every year for a 10-year period of time. Uncle Sam doesn't care, but that account's got to be depleted by the end of the 10 years. Peg?
Yeah, I agree with that. And so it kind of is an individual, because we look at people's clients' tax rates and say, okay, this is what you should probably pull out this year, just like we do with standard operating procedure with all of our clients, but especially with these inherited IRAs.
And the taxes are your tax bracket. So your mom or dad that had the IRA, when they were taking withdrawals, that withdrawal was added to all their other sources of taxable income, and they had, and then they took their deductions. Most of them took a standard deduction, and then the net number of total income minus your standard deduction, your taxes were based on that income, and there's percentages, and it's graduated. Well, if you inherit and you're a highly compensated person in a 37% tax bracket, you're going to pay more taxes on that IRA than your mom and dad were. And that's just the way the law works. That it's when you take a withdrawal or a distribution from an IRA, it's ordinary income. It's added to all your other ordinary income, and you pay taxes on it on that rate. Because, Peg, the other question I get a lot is, well, what's the cost or what's the tax percent when I draw this money out? And the answer is, it depends. Well, how much income do you have, and what are your other sources of income? It's not a flat, fixed number. Susie?
651-461-9226. Peg, a couple folks wanted to text in to say they were getting a 12-month CD at their credit union for 4.45%. And another said a four-week T-bill, still getting just over 4%. So those are a couple nice ideas for people that have short-term
great
money, and that's always nice, isn't it? I know, Bruce, you mentioned that it's still kind of early to talk about, but a texter wanted to know how this new tax bill would affect seniors. Do we have any sense of that at this point?
I don't, you know, again, we mentioned earlier that some seniors are going to get some credits. It's a combination of age and income, so there might be some benefit there. But one of the things, you know, that we didn't mention, again, I want to keep emphasizing it's new and it's almost 900 pages. But one of the other things that happened is they're pulling back on tax incentives for clean energy, and there's already been a lot of speculation that that might drive up our costs for cooling and heating our home. That's not just unique to seniors. That might impact everybody. So in terms of specifics for seniors, Peg, I'm not sure that I caught anything else yet. And again, Peg mentioned, I'm not going to say I got a copy of the whole bill and tried to read all 900 pages. I flipped through the internet and looked for little articles that kind of summarized it and took some of the headlines. But anything, Peg, that springs to mind for you in terms of benefits in the new law for seniors?
Yeah, not so much. I thought it was kind of interesting as we talk about these SALT deductions and that state and local taxes. So there was, do you remember there was a big change in that, and it's why most people don't itemize anymore. We used to be able to deduct state and local taxes on our itemization sheet that we would work on. So, but then they came out with this 10,000 cap. Well, that cap, because it was 10,000, at the same time, the government came out with a higher standard deduction. So once again, most people, were doing just the simple return, you know, not itemizing. Well, one thing they did here is they increased the deductions for state and local taxes, and they raised them from 10,000 to 40,000 with it increasing 1% annually. Now, this may not necessarily, well, I should also add here that the deduction starts in 25, but then it falls back to 10 in 2029. There's the part, Bruce, that there isn't a lot of clarity on how long are these new items going to be out there. But then there's also a cap on this salt. You know, it's not for everybody. There's so much detail. So I think even this week, for sure, we're going to get clarity on a lot of the things that will affect many of our clients, Bruce.
Susie, can we squeeze in one more?
Well, we can. I think the question was sort of similar to one that was asked before, but I'll say it. Would now be a good time to pull money out of my two inherited IRAs since the market's up? And it just went on to say, my parents passed in 2024. I took out 10% last year, doing the same this year. Wanting to put it in my HSA and Roth. To that point, if the answer is yes, am I better investing it into those two accounts into a money market at 4% until the market comes back down and then move it to mutual funds when they're cheaper? That's a big question, but you can see what you can. Okay, go ahead.
Peg, can you do that one in about 30 seconds?
Sorry.
Well, here's what I would do is if you have any, hesitation, then you should dollar cost average. I think, you know, the market is high. Put your money in monthly and try to get an average, you know, deposit of timing. I can't tell you what is going to happen in the next 6 months.
You
but
can't?
I can tell you that the market's at an all-time high.
Yeah. Well, Peg and Bruce, thank you. This was a great show, and we got a lot of good text questions. Some of those we did not get to, so we will tell folks that if they're listening and they have asked a question, because there are a couple of others, they can call 888-6-ADVICE at any time, or they can email at yourmoney.wealthenhancement.com. Bruce, though, we have just 20 seconds. How long do you think roughly we'll know before all this? I mean, you talked about this 900-page bill. It'll be a while till we kind of figure it all out, right?
Yeah, but we'll have people at Wealth Enhancement already analyzing this. And again, I don't know when, but it wouldn't surprise me if we devote a show to this where we dig in a little deeper sooner than later.
Awesome. Hey, great show, guys. Have a good rest of your weekend. That is Bruce Helmer, Peg Webb. It is Your Money on WCCO.